Natalie Teeter and Michael Villegas are both students at San Francisco State University. Natalie is an undergraduate there where she is studying cinema and ethnic studies. Michael graduated from SF State with a BA in humanities, as well as philosophy and religious studies, and is beginning an MA in humanities. In early June, Michael, Natalie, and eight others from in and around the College of Ethnic Studies at SF State went to Arizona as volunteers with a nonprofit organization, No More Deaths, whose mission is to end death and suffering along the U.S.-Mexico border and in the Sonoran Desert, where between October of 2010 and this past June, at least 128 people have died. Welcome, Natalie Teeter and Michael Villegas, who takes on the world. What took you personally, both of you, to Arizona? Let's start with Michael.
All right, well, essentially a lot of us students out there in San Francisco State, we've been sort of frustrated and a little disheartened about the policies going on out there in Arizona, both socially and politically. So we felt that there was a need to actually go there physically and provide some sort of service to them and help them with their struggles directly, like on the ground.
And Natalie?
I did not really find the reason that I went to Arizona until I was in Arizona. Nothing could have really prepared me. I understood that the situation along the border was bad, that people were dying, that it was a humanitarian crisis. But nothing could have prepared me for what I saw and for how, once I was there, I began to understand how widespread and tremendous the suffering is that is going on, and that is why I was there, is to provide service to No More Deaths and work to end, you know, towards their mission statement to end the death and suffering that is happening along the border.
Now, how did both of you become acquainted with No More Deaths or No Más Muerte, No Más Muertes? How did you come in contact with that in order for you to volunteer? We'll start, Natalie, you. Yeah.
Last year, a professor that came with us, Jason Ferreira, a friend of his, Victor, was a friend from college, and Victor works for No More Deaths. So last year, a group of students raised money to send to No More Deaths, and then this year we decided to take it a step further and actually go down there and volunteer. So I believe we were originally connected to the organization through Victor, who is Jason's friend.
And Michael, could you tell us a bit about this organization, No More Deaths?
Yeah, no problem. I mean, they're pretty much they are a church-based organization, but they're based within the community out there in all around Arizona, from Tucson to the border regions of like Nogales and the desert regions we were at out by Aravaca. That's pretty much their mission. Their idea is to end death and suffering out there on the border regions, but through different initiatives, what they call civil initiatives. And one of the main things they're doing is the volunteers themselves, us and other people who went out there, we pretty much serve as, sort of like witnesses the suffering out there, so that way we can spread more awareness to the migrant problems out there and what they're going through. So that's the main idea, is to spread awareness and to provide direct aid right out there in the desert.
So you're actually more than witnesses.
No, exactly, definitely.
And Natalie, what kind of services did you provide?
Every day we were out on the trails, got up at 5 or 6 in the morning, hit the trails by about 7:30, and we did water drops. So they have tested the trails by, you know, putting out gallons of water, and then you go back a couple days later and see if they move. And so there's waypoints in a very large span in the area that they that No More Deaths patrols. So we would go to these waypoints and drop water, and that was one service that we provided. The other service was walking patrols, where we would go on hikes anywhere from a mile to 6, 7, sometimes 10 miles there, you know, there and back, just patrolling the trails and looking for people who are lost or who are in need, and that we could, to help. And there was also exploring, where we would explore new areas and look for new trails in order to try to keep up with the trails and what places that are busy. It's not stagnant; it's constantly changing, and which is what makes the work difficult. So not only we were walking the trails that were already mapped, but we were mapping new trails and trying to discover the new areas that were being used for migration.
And what were the weather conditions?
It was hot. It was very hot. I mean, the conditions out there are brutal, brutal. Just heat, dry heat that never lets up. And it gets cold. Actually, that's not true. It does let up. It lets up at night, and it gets very cold. And while we were there, it dropped to maybe the low 50s. But in the rest of the year, it gets really cold at night. So not only are people who are making this journey suffering from from exposure to heat, but there's also issues with hypothermia of extreme cold.
Michael, did you encounter migrants while you were down there?
Oh yes, definitely. I'd say, some of the stuff we can't talk too much in detail about, yeah. But I can say that as a group, like not only our own group that went out there from SS State, but as a group with the other volunteers that were also there with us, I'd say we impacted the lives of at least 5 to 7 different individuals, different migrants passing through the border areas, and I would like to say that we affected them in a positive way. We helped them with food and water. We helped them get oriented to where they were at, to understand where they were in Arizona. Because you can't exactly give them direct location. You can't tell them, go this way, go that way. But you can give them an idea of where they are in the desert. So, there's really small, there's a lot of small stipulations involved.
Now, you were both in, let's say, hostile territory, Natalie, because most of the Arizonans, the non-indigenous Arizonans, the white Arizonans, or at least many of them, are very hostile not only to immigrants, but they're also hostile to people who try and help them, no?
That is true. The Border Patrol are malicious, and we did not experience the kind of abuse that migrants experience. No More Deaths right now is working on an abuse report of the abuses that are inflicted upon migrants by Border Patrol. And I mean, it's a really long report. And some of the things, one of the things that we encounter directly is, on these water drops, we drop water, and we come back, and the water is slashed, and that is nothing, short of murder. When you are intentionally destroying water that is the only, source of life out there, when migrants are walking for days, it's a very hostile environment.
Now, is this done by Border Patrol or vigilantes?
Both.
Now, Michael, where do these migrants come from? I know it's not just Mexico. People come from. Did you run people from Salvador, Guatemala?
Oh, definitely. It's a lot less likely that you'll run into someone. The largest majority of migrant traffic is coming from Mexico, but there is also from other areas, depending on, Honduras, depending on how far. It's not, like I said, it's pretty rare, but there is traffic from all areas of Latin America.
Because that's much more difficult, because say even crossing Mexico is not, because people in Mexico, they know people's accents, they know people are strangers. They know they're not from their local town. They can even tell what countries people are from. So it's not that easy coming from those Central America, for example, to get through Mexico to begin with.
No, exactly.
Arizona is such a hostile place. They've passed regressive laws like Senate Bill 1070.
Yeah.
Which was legal racial profiling. Which one of you like to tell about that? Talk about that one,
Michael.
Well, That was one of the more disheartening things that brought us out there. I mean, we understood the socio-political environment of Arizona, including SB 1070. But aside from that, also the House Bill 2281, which was basically an attack against ethnic studies. But to go back to the SB 1070, I mean, like you said, it creates an environment of racial profiling, to where now you have the police and ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, working in coalition together. So now you have people being pulled over for traffic stops in the cities like Tucson, and then being asked to provide documentation. So I mean, now you have all sorts of new deportations happening, mass deportations, mainly due to that bill.
So is essentially driving while brown is going to get you stopped by the police or the sheriffs.
Exactly. That bill's also been known as the Papers, Please immigration law. So, I mean, that says a lot right there.
Now, also, you have this thing that you is happening in the course called Operation Streamline, mm-hmm. In which they're railroading people through the courts without any really due process. Maybe one of you could talk about that.
The day before we went out to the desert, all the volunteers for No More Deaths went and sat in the courtroom and watched a court proceeding of Operation Streamline. And in about an hour and 15 minutes, we saw 70 people sent to prison. They line them up in the line of 10, and the judge just goes down the line, and they have signed already plea bargains before they go in there. So they are all, everything is squished together. It's like the normal proceedings of justice are just done on a massive scale. They're completely stripped of due process because the judges combine the initial appearance and the plea and the sentencing together, and it's not just one person, it's 70.
And what kind of legal defense do the people get? I mean,
they have access to a public defender. And when Operation Streamline started, there would be maybe one, two public defenders for all 70 people. Now they have the process is that one public defender can serve 6 people, and this happens every single day.
What kind of protests are going on that are there year round within the Arizona community?
Well, there's definitely a lot of grassroots organizations that are doing a lot of really great work out there. You know, we don't want to paint the picture of Arizona as just being nothing but a desolate land and nothing but horrible and terrible laws and all that. I mean, that is true. That is very true. But also on the grassroots level, you have all these really beautiful and really innovative organizations that are fighting against these laws. For instance, you have Unidos, which is a youth coalition, and they formed in response to the HB 2281 bill, which was against ethnic studies. So they've done a lot of direct action. And then you have another small group called Tierra y Libertad, TILO, which is, again, another grassroots organization based out of Tucson. And that's, like, mainly a bunch of students that are working towards, like, sustainability in different projects or in different neighborhoods. So there's definitely a lot of counteraction to these different legislation that's happening.
And now you went as volunteers, and No More Deaths operates using volunteers. But they do this year around, correct?
Yes.
And so are they harassed? The church group, are they harassed by the authorities?
There have been instances, and there have been court proceedings where volunteers have been prosecuted, but they have never been convicted. No More Deaths, they say that humanitarian aid is never a crime, and that's like bedrock, idea behind the entire organization. So a lot of the encounters with border patrol were it was either one or the other, where their reaction was, oh, you're No More Deaths, we're not going to mess with you because, you know, they've been, the law has been on our side. But the other, you know, the other response is, oh, you're no more deaths. We're going to give you a really hard time.
So what are you limited from doing? What are you allowed to do that you can get away with in helping immigrants, and what can't you do?
Well, I think Natalie actually hit it right on the head, like she said, you know, the main motto of No More Deaths is humanitarian aid is never a crime. So what they've been able to do legally is provide food and water, medical attention when necessary. If it's really, really bad, they can call in for like a medevac, so they could have a helicopter come in and do that, right? But what you can't do, most specifically, is you can't harbor. So you can't like hide in a migrant from the Border Patrol, and you can't help with the process of them crossing. So it's like it's a really fine line that you're dealing with here, you know. But again, the main thing is you can provide food and water. You can help with the health. So that those
you're
are the two
things you can.
You're not
allowed to provide directions. You can only orient them.
Yeah.
So one thing that I found extremely frustrating in our work. Like my first day out on the trails, I came across a group of six people, and they were extremely lost. They were 3 miles from the border, and they had already been out on this side of the border for 7 days, and they had been traveling for a month on the other side of the border. So the only thing we were allowed to tell them was, this way is north, you're 3 miles from the border, but you cannot lead them, you cannot give them directions, and eventually, you know, you can give them water. We gave them water, food, we patched up their blisters, but then you have to, you know, you have to leave them out there, which was something that was so heartbreaking for me. Was I can only do so much.
Yeah. My guest that was the last voice of Natalie Teeter and Michael Villegas, who volunteered in Arizona with No More Deaths. That was a moving story. You could also provide them with change of clothes, as I understand, and cell phone calls. There was one incident, I remember you told me, if you want to tell Natalie about how a change of clothes came in handy with one immigrant.
Well, we were at a gas station. We actually are not allowed to provide cell phone calls. But what we did help a migrant at a gas station, we gave him a clean shirt, which allowed him to, you know, go from looking like somebody who just spent 10 days in the desert to somebody who, you know, is not, you know, not suspicious. So we were able to get him a clean shirt so that he could come out and use the payphone to make the phone call.
Go on, yes, Michael.
I'm sorry, I was going to say one thing. In terms of providing phone calls, that's one thing that that No More Deaths does outside of the desert. On border towns, when migrants are repatriated back to Mexico, in Nogales and Naco and Agua Prieta, they are allowed. What they do is they sit out at bus stations when migrants just arrive, and that's what they do. They provide phone calls, change of clothing, food, all the same things that are in the desert. But in this case, it's due to lack of institutional control out there with Border Patrol and the abuse that happens when people are detained.
We will be able to take telephone calls. If any of you listeners have calls or questions for either Natalie or Michael, the number here, of course, is 895-2448 or 1-800-499-7117. So there were 10 of you in all. Now, you're a graduate student now, Michael, and you're an undergraduate, but you all came together through the College of Ethnic Studies?
Yes.
Who were the other members who went with you? What brought them into this? Could you speak for them in general?
I mean, I'd say generally speaking, all of us in some form or another were connected mainly through our Professor Jason Ferreira in ethnic studies out there in San Francisco State. So a lot of us have also worked on a side project out there at SF State called the All Power to the People Archive Project. And the idea is to just sort of document the history of the San Francisco strike in 68. And again, document it through the voices of the actual participants, so through the veterans that have done it. So it's sort of like getting an oral history through them. So, I mean, a lot of us are connected through those two main things.
Well, wasn't it in San Francisco State where ethnic studies began?
Exactly. And that's the whole goal of the archive project. Natalie is also a part of the archive project. That's how we met, actually, this semester. So.
Yes, I recall spending quite a bit of time at San Francisco State as a photographer for Underground Press during the 60s, and San Francisco State was one of the most important campuses that were involved in leading protests, not just against the war, but for ethnic studies, to really bring the war back home in a different sort of way. And I was really happy to learn that this was happening at San Francisco State. Are you planning to go there again, to volunteer again?
Yes.
Definitely.
I think San Francisco State will have a presence at No More Deaths for the years to come. We came, you know, when we told No More Deaths that we were coming with 10 people this year, they were, you know, that's a big group. Usually people come in ones and twos. And we were talking about coming back, you know, with 20 next June, and not just with people from ethnic studies, but people from the community, people from the, you know, from the city, from the East Bay, from Oakland, and bringing this community in the Bay Area together and coming together in the Bay Area and then taking that power and bringing it to Arizona.
Because that sounds like an incredible idea. Have you done outreach have you begun to do any outreach to other campuses?
Not at this point, but we do have plans this fall and this summer to go to other campuses and present, on our trip, and share our knowledge.
We have a caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Jeff, it's Cal.
Cal.
It's a great program, and many thanks to your very brave speakers. It's very inspiring to hear what they're doing, and maybe you'll keep some details so that they could be invited up to talk to people firsthand at some point about what's going on and what their experiences have been.
Thank you, Cal.
Thank you.
Also, the website, by the way, for No More Deaths is nomoredeaths.org, and there you'll find a very comprehensive website with projects, volunteer information, how to donate, how to contact, and the list of, and there's a number at the top of the page which tells you the number of people who have died since October of last year. That's where I had the figure, 128, and that's the deaths that are known. The desert there is huge, obviously.
That number has been estimated, that some conservative estimates say that's about half the deaths that are going on, and other estimates say that's about a tenth. Because things don't, things decompose very quickly in the desert. And the Tucson sector is very large, and so those are just the deaths that we know about. It's massive, it's widespread, the suffering and the death that is happening, and it's created that way. But I want to make that really clear. This is not a situation that has just just occurred this way. Starting in 1994, with policies like Operation Hold the Line in Texas and Operation Gatekeeper in San Diego, have been funneling people away from the urban areas where they can cross into the most desolate parts of the border, like the Tucson sector, like the desert. And there are more checkpoints and more border patrol. People are forced to walk for longer. There is a checkpoint on the freeway.
And this is supposed to be essentially a policy of deterrence by Homeland Security, right, by the Department of Homeland Security. But in reality, what it becomes is deterrence by death. So you're telling people, if you want to cross, you're going to have to risk your life to do it.
And that's one of the reasons the New York Times can say fewer people are coming from Mexico. We have another caller. Let's go to the next caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Jeff, Jonathan Shepard here. I wanted to add to the previous caller. This show you have and the guest you have on is very inspiring, I must say. I try to keep up with all this stuff, and I haven't even heard of this program, and I was so grateful to hear about it. Finally, we're having people act in a sane and rational way about this terrible problem that's been visited on the poor people from Mexico. Thanks so much for having this program. Very inspiring.
Your call's appreciated. Thank you. We have another caller. Hello, you're on the air. Hello, caller. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about my experience in Arizona.
Yes?
I'm sorry?
Yes, go ahead.
We would love to hear it.
Oh, okay. Well, I took my daughter down to Arizona and actually into New Mexico to the border to drop her off on the Continental Divide Trail. And on our way there, we were putting in water caches in different spots along the trail every 10 miles, and we were experiencing having them slashed. I don't know who was doing it, but it's really a horrible experience to be out in the middle of the desert, go to your water stash, and have it all destroyed. Another experience we had is we were pulled over by the Border Patrol 20 times in a 24-hour period. Wow. On our way out to the trailhead. And most of them were actually very courteous, especially the Mexican ones, but the white guys were very rude. And it was pretty scary, really scary. But the saddest part was to see all of the slashed water bottles and the antagonism towards the travelers. It's just really sad.
Well, thanks very much for your call, for sharing that with us.
You bet. Catch you later.
If I could say one thing,
yes,
Jeff,
Michael, yes.
Responding on the phone call there, it's true, you know, Border Patrol is out there slashing the jugs, but even worse, there's instances of them actually shooting with their guns through the water jugs. I mean, that's very vicious right there. That takes something psychologically going on up there for them to actually shoot through the jugs.
It's sadism.
Yeah.
And I've seen that myself years ago when it's a long time since I've been to the border. But, of course, this is a whole history that goes back since I was, before I was born, or close to the time, actually, of the games that the United States has played with immigrants from Mexico who are so necessary for the U.S. economy. I mean, the food we put on the table is relatively cheap, and it's cheap because the people who pick it get paid very little to do so. And those people who complain about immigrants, of course, not to mention this is stolen land.
Exactly. Ona Odom people live there.
As a matter of fact, they had a story the other day on yesterday morning on National Public Radio Morning Edition about problems dealing with the area conquered from Mexico, but the reference to the Mexican War was like it was just a war that happened. That it wasn't an aggressive war launched by the United States was not mentioned at all. And the school books of the United States students don't learn the history of this unprovoked war that caused President Lincoln not to run for Congress again in protest. So there's a long history, but the exploitation of workers, starting with the Bracero program, is something that it doesn't have the proper attention paid to it. It needs to. Here's another caller. I'm going to get you. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. We've worked with CISPIS.
Speak up, please.
Can
you speak up?
We've worked through CISPIS.
Yeah, CISPIS, yes.
And the spiritual community, where we've had a sanctuary program, and Salvadorans were sheltered and provided for somewhat. You know, they still had to work and go to school. And I've heard about other sanctuary programs that have been threatened. If you can talk about that, and if you're aware if these can be strengthened to continue this that program that we started.
Thank you, caller. Did you hear the call?
It was a little bit low for me.
She was speaking low. She was talking about CISPAS, the Committee in Solidarity with People of El Salvador, had a sanctuary programs which were threatened by the federales, and she wanted to know if you knew anything about those at all.
Actually, I can't say that I'm too familiar with those programs over there. I'm not sure if Natalie is.
I'm not too familiar with it, but what I do know is that No More Deaths actually came out of the sanctuary movement. That's where its roots are. So there is definitely a connection between the organization we were working for and the sanctuary movement.
No More Deaths is a ministry of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tucson, and they have... That's one church that is an activist church that's interested in actually serving the people. So one doesn't have to be a believer to work with them, I gather. It's a church-based program, but it's not the design of the church is not to evangelize and recruit new members, I assume.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd like to emphasize that, as a matter of fact, that just about anybody can go out there and provide service and can help with what's going on the borderlands. All it takes is a little bit of willingness, a little bit of passion, and a little bit of determination. I mean, you're going to go through a lot out there. I wouldn't recommend saying, a 12, 13-year-old kid go out there. But, if you're in a decent physical state, anybody could help, and they're willing to have anybody help. You don't need special skills or anything,
So
I would like to speak to a point that she made earlier. I just want to make this clear. The task of the Border Patrol and the border policy is not to stop this illegal immigration. It is really to manage and to control that migration, because, like you said, the economy of our country is dependent on this exploitation of undocumented labor. And the purpose of forcing them to come through the desert and to be separated from their families and for it to be very expensive is so that they are in the most vulnerable position possible and therefore the easiest to exploit.
Well, that's a very good point you make, because they've been doing this, as I say, in various ways. It's like playing a game with the people of Mexico. The United States has controlled the Mexican economy for over 100, not quite 100 years, but close to that, and forced a situation where Mexican people have to immigrate in order to survive. And this is something that most Americans are not aware of, because that, again, is not taught in our schools. We've come down to the end of the hour, and I want to thank both of you, Michael and Natalie. You each have a last comment, quick comment.
Yeah, I'd like to just say one thing really fast. I mean, what's at stake here is more than we can say in words, but definitely what's at stake is human and civil rights are at stake out here. I mean, they're being violated daily on the borderlands. People are living in a climate of fear, violence, and discrimination. So it's important for us to stand in solidarity with them as a neighboring state.
And thank you. And Natalie?
Just to follow up with what Michael said, there are people doing wonderful work in Arizona. And to quote my, professor, another Arizona is possible. And to work, I'm so lucky that I got the chance to go down there and work in solidarity with the people, in No More Deaths. And I would encourage anybody who has the opportunity and the ability to do so to go down there and see this for your own eyes, because in this short time, there's no possible way that we can convey properly what we saw and what we experienced. But it is so important that it's known what's going on. It's a war zone down there. It's a war zone, and it's invisible.
Well, thank you, Natalie Teeter and Michael Villegas, for your report on No More Deaths. And I hope listeners will go to that website, nomoredeaths.org, and if you're able-bodied, think about volunteering. And this program, of course, will be up online, radioforall.net, radioforall.net, by this afternoon if you want to listen to it again. So this is Jeff Blankford with Takes on the World. I want to thank both you, Natalie and Michael, for being our guests today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeffrey.